We are back with another episode of Smell You Later.
We have so much to go through.
So much.
So much to talk about.
I have a table full of perfumes.
We don't have to go through all of them, though.
No, we don't.
It's fine.
I feel like we went to so many fragrance events this week.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I did not go to the Frederick Mall one because I was tired.
I did go to this Frederick Mall one. So Frederick Mall is celebrating what I believe is the anniversary of Portrait of a Lady. And they had...
Poel.
What?
I saw on the invite they abbreviated Portrait of a Lady to P-O-A-L.
Oh, I hate... Don't do that.
Poel.
Sounds like a disease. I did go. And before you all call me a two-faced hypocrite, which would be correct... I have famously derided Portrait of a Lady at every chance.
Is it just like a rose?
It's a like rose patchouli, whatever. It's a very classic deep rose. It's pretty. It's just not for me. I really don't like the
people
scent.
People go hard for roses.
Hard. And
rose
Portrait
is
of a Lady.
Like the Taylor Swift of perfume.
It is. But I like Frederick Mall, so of course I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I would go to the opening of a can.
It's giving the can.
It was really fun. It was really just like a nice little cocktail thing with all the girls. But so that was Thursday. It was Thursday. And then last night, I was running around, and I realized that the coat that I wore to the event, which I was at for maybe an hour and a half, I was like, oh my God, it seeped into my coat.
Ooh.
And I didn't even touch a bottle. It was just in the air so much that now it is seeped into my pea coat. So I got what I deserved. Shout out to Frederick Mall. We need to have someone from the brand on.
Have they ever pitched?
We've had positive conversations about
it. Dominique Rapion is there. Let's have him on. Sure. Dom, come on the pod. Finery, the Target brand, had an event. I guess it was like for launching their male coated collection.
And candles.
Yeah. So they do have candles now. I thought they had candles before. No, I'm wrong. Yeah. But I got to smell a lot of the missing pieces that I hadn't smelled before. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's funny because I was speaking with... I want to say she was the SVP. I'm not entirely sure, but I was like, so how do you come up with the names? And it was kind of just like, well, we all brainstorm names. You put them on a wall, then we all pick the one. Right. I was like, and I wanted to be like, no, but because it's about, because you're doing with the, I wasn't sure if it was impolite to be like, so how do you come up with these names that imply it's a dupe, but it's not. They sent me home with the good girl one. It's the purple one.
Yeah.
It's the shoe scent. The shoe perfume.
Oh, yeah.
Which apparently has been like one of the top selling fragrances for women.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Then I smelled it. And I'm sure I smelled Carolina Herrera Good Girl ages ago when it launched and I didn't think anything of it. But now I was like, oh, this is exactly the blueprint of the floral amber hot girl scent out there.
Isn't there coffee in the original?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I remember.
But I totally get it now. I was like, okay, this is why it's so popular. And especially now, because this scent profile just happens to be very popular. And I was like, get it.
Yeah. No, I was excited to go. We really like Finery because they do dupes or not, whatever. Really high quality, beautiful fragrances at a really affordable price point at Target, which is very important. It was nice to.
I think we'll have them on the show soon.
Yeah.
I hope we will. Yeah. I'm trying to make it happen. But it's tricky because I want to ask questions that might be rude.
No, I think that we're not going to ask any rude questions. No, but
we will ask rude questions politely.
Yes. We deserve to. She dragged me to hell right in front of my face at the event. I was like, okay, I guess come on the show.
It was funny because I was talking to someone at the brand who was like, so wait, listen to the podcast. We know that you make fun of our name.
Well.
You know, all names are bad.
We're not here to make friends.
And I live by that.
Yeah. They also, which I didn't know, they're a Mesa brand.
What is Mesa?
Mesa is a beauty incubator.
Who else do they have?
They do Mixed Bar, which she informed me is still a thing.
Right.
They do Being Frenchie.
Oh, they do. I didn't realize that. But that makes sense because they're also a Target.
Exactly. And then they do a lot of a lot of hair brands. I think they do some skin. So very recognizable names in this sort of affordable beauty space. Which, frankly, would be a cool episode to have outside of Finery as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have them on. But you went to... I feel like you went to another one aside from Frederick Mall.
I went to Finery, then I had drinks with Jordan Samuels.
Right. Yeah. I did catch up with our favorite favorito, who is the Dior publicist, and he gave me their newest...
He would be my favorite if you ever sent me a goddamn fragrance.
I think you just have to ask.
What's the point of being friends if I have to ask for anything? I'm kidding.
Yeah, I had dinner with him the other night, and he sent me their new... Premier line release, Bois Talisman.
Bois means wood, right?
Yeah,
right.
Bois means wood. Talisman means talisman.
This is so...
It's so nice.
Pretty.
The Dior Premier Collection is like pretty hit or miss for me.
Sure.
Honestly, most of them I've been like, this is nice, but it's not for me. But this one is so beautiful. It's like a spicy wood that's like really warm and soft.
If I say this fragrance's name one more time in this podcast, I'm going to get struck by lightning. But this sort of gives me By the Fireplace.
It does. It's a lot softer, though. It's not as... It's not as charred.
Sure. Dior loves a musk.
They love... Yeah, it's muskier than that. But I was like, okay, this I will wear. Yes, thank you. But I love getting a fragrance with like absolutely no literature, nothing about it. Yeah, just, like, there you go.
Figure it out.
I was have a bottle. Yeah. And I'm like, cool.
Do you have the collateral that came with these? It's fine. I'll Google it.
Somewhere? Yeah. I don't know where to put it. Yeah, we both got the... So Gucci, The Alchemist Garden...
The Premier line that Premier looks line. Like little vases or like little things you'd keep ashes
little apothecary
in.
Bottles. Yeah. They released 4 scents for the year, okay. I suppose. They're sure. The 2025 launches. I don't know if they're just spring launches or just for the year. There's 4 scents. They're all based on alchemy, obviously. Don't ask me how.
Is it more of the garden?
I think it's more alchemy because you're like, this is fire. This is the this way.
That makes sense.
They explained it in the literature that I read and did not absorb. I'm sorry. But of the 4, there's Vanilla Firenze, Tears from the Moon, Osmanthus Nectar.
And Fiore di Neroli.
Yes.
Just said that because it's facing me.
Yeah. My favorite is the Vanilla Firenze.
I'm wearing that today.
Yeah, because, okay, perhaps I should ask then, Tynan, what are you smelling today?
I'm so happy you asked. I am wearing Vanilla Firenze from Gucci, The Alchemist Garden. And it is giving me everything that I want. What I appreciate about it is this is a really spicy take on vanilla.
This actually reminds me a bit of By the Fireplace.
Really?
A little bit.
If
that smoky vanilla, I think.
Sure. If it was not named vanilla... Mm-hmm. I would actually say this is spiced forward with being backed by vanilla, both of which I really like. It will tell you that within the fragrance, there is black pepper, cardamom, carrot seed, Italian iris butter, myrrh resinoid, benzoin resinoid, bourbon vanilla infusion, bourbon vanilla absolute, bourbon vanilla pure jungle essence, TM. All right.
TM.
To me, that makes it sound... beautiful, but perhaps not all that unique. And maybe it's not, but
you don't have to be unique to be beautiful.
No, that's true. I get, though, there's like this, I can't get out of my head, this like anise moment. Not licorice, but like a true sort of like anise with the cardamom, all that, which I really like. So yeah, it's real spicy. It's got a lot of depth to it. It is vanilla and it is sweet, but I think that...
There's like a sweet smokiness. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very... It's a lot more than vanilla, but it's also really balanced.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice. It's really nice. I as I'm smelling the other 3 on blotters, I'm also really excited to wear my way through Tears of the Moon from the
Tears of the Moon is like it's a floral. Mm-hmm. It's a very pretty floral, but it's a little soapy for my taste.
Okay. I can see that.
It's a pretty aldehydic floral. Oops. Osmanthus Nectar. I think I described it as cunty apricot.
You're going to jail.
And I stand by it.
No, I'm actually really excited for that one. It smells really interesting.
The apricot's really... I like apricot. It's pretty out there. And then the Fiore di Neroli is... It's a very pretty orange blossom Neroli scent.
It's not really doing for me.
But it's also... I've smelled a lot of these before.
Sure, yeah.
But it's a very lovely scent.
That to me is reading most classic. But again, that's just on blotter, not on skin. Yeah. So I can't really judge.
I also... Oh, I got a bottle of vanilla smoke. Body splash, mist.
Okay.
And it is the similar smoky vanilla, like charred vanilla profile. And I'm okay. So now we're burning vanilla. This is the new trend.
Yeah.
Are we charring vanilla now?
Did you like vanilla smoke?
I like it. I think with a lot of the Fleur body mists, it's just such a heavy, like, it's a pretty saturated, it's a pretty strong scent. So to me, I'm just like, okay, it's a little bit much, but it's nice. I can't remember if I smelled vanilla skin from them. I don't think I have.
Vanilla skin is very sweet.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a dupe because it's not, but it is very akin to Tom Ford Vanilla Sex. Very similar.
This one would be more akin then to Vanilla Tobacco. Tobacco Vanille, I think.
Okay.
The Tom Ford one. Yeah. It's just like a super
If you are interested in something called Vanilla Smoke and want it from a cooler brand and or a more concentrated formula, I would definitely say, and I don't think this has made it to market yet, but Persons of Interest also is exploring a fragrance called Vanilla Smoke. And I don't see it on their site, but they sent me a comp vial of it. And I also saw someone else post a larger bottle of it. So, Dino, please put it out. It is very incredible. We are a huge fan of your brand and vanilla. It only makes sense. Sable, what do you smell like today?
Okay, so I really like this new scent that I got this week. I visited with a new French brand called Les Eaux Primordiales, Primordial Waters, if you will. It's a line of about, they have 11 or 12 scents. It's very derived from French perfumery. I am wearing their Rose Super Critique.
Oh, I heard really good things about the Rose specifically.
The Rose, honestly, I was surprised because canonically I'm not a Rose person. This is so good. And I think for me personally, what I like about it is that it's not super rose forward.
Okay.
It's a lot more spicy, warm and spicy and musky with a little bit of sweetness from rose.
Wow, I would not get rose from that at all.
Exactly. If you didn't tell me it was rose, I never would have assumed it was rose. I would have thought cardamom, tea, incense, vanilla. They name, what do they say? Oh no, they use the O word.
Flop.
Rose, the ultimate majestic flower, is here reinvented in a O-word palace.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Notes of spiced tea, incense, and vanilla instill this rose with the splendor of a voluptuous and sensual queen of Sheba. What did we say about using voluptuous?
I don't know about any of that.
Yeah, okay. But when the founder was talking us through the scents, I believe he mentioned cardamom in it. But spicy, incense, vanilla, I feel like those are what really stand out to me. And then the rose is there. It just adds like a little bit of plush sweetness to it. But it's so, so pretty. A lot of the scents in this line are really, it's like they call out the hero note in it or the hero accord and then interpret it in their own way. They have a saffron one. So obviously I was like, okay, I got to smell that one.
I just blotted it.
And the saffron one to me smells so much like suede, so much like leather.
Mm, yeah,
I don't really get saffron off the rip. But the founder mentioned that he used to work in the Häagen-Dazs factory.
Okay.
He grew up in the north of France, and he remembers just pouring vats of frozen raspberries into the, I don't know what you call it, the Stregonona pot of ice cream for the raspberry flavor. For him, it was like the scent of the raspberries getting mixed in with the ice cream. Plus saffron, which I thought was really cute.
Wait, holy fucking shit. Have you smelled the amber?
The amber is pretty heady.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
The amber, which was interesting, he called out an apple pie accord.
No, totally.
Yeah. And it smells so much like apple pie, which again, is like interesting that all the hero notes that are called out are not what comes to the forefront. So for the amber, it's freshly baked cinnamon infused apple pie and gingerbread. Oh, word, spices. Just say spices. Spices and honey notes give character and softness. Tobacco and rum. So yeah, it's like a very boozy apple pie, which is nice.
If I reach out, is she going to stalk me?
No, she'll send them. Okay. She'll probably also want you to cover them in some way.
I won't be doing that.
But they have an iris as well. And
I
love iris.
The one that I was going to ask you about and the one I'm blotting right now. Yep, nope.
The iris, which is interesting, I wore it on skin the other day and I almost got a figgy effect from it.
You like a powdery fig, though.
Yeah. It was a powdery fig, but this one incorporates cardamom, sandalwood. What did I say? Yeah.
If fig is a spectrum of...
Yeah.
You are on the furthest end of the powdery side, and I'm on the furthest end of the juicy side.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I thought it was funny that I was like, oh, it is like an irisy fig. I like that. They're all really beautiful scents, and they had two extracts. One of which was a vanilla, but he was explaining how real vanilla pods are not sweet at all.
Hmm.
They're really bitter and earthy.
Okay.
The extract of the vanilla read to me super earthy. Almost, not similar in scent, but similar in effect. Maison Crivelli Patchouli Magnétique.
Hmm.
The same way it's super earthy.
Yep. I love that one.
Yeah, it's really good. But it also made me think of the Dies & Durga Deep Dark Vanilla.
Oh.
and how we were both like, this isn't vanilla at all. Then I was like, oh, it's the pod. So they both went with the actual literal vanilla pod, not our idea of what vanilla is with the sugar and the caramel and the cream. So that was really interesting to
this
me.
This amber is turning me out.
Yeah.
What is going on?
I think they're going to send me the rose one, but I should have asked for them.
I'm going to reach out. Bonjour.
Bonjour. Yeah. Beautiful line. I think they're new to the States, so...
How much do these run?
That's an excellent question. I don't know. I feel like probably expensive. He said that his first perfume he made for Colette, the concept store in Paris that's no longer around.
Yeah.
And then from that, Harrods requested a scent from him. It's the very boutique brand.
Okay, so when I was at the Finery event, Jamie was talking about this and the desk side she had with him, and she was like really speaking really highly of him in the sense and the way that he talks about him and name dropped the rose.
Yeah, 100 milliliters is 190 euro. 50 milliliters is 130 euro. So
I mean, that's not terrible, that's not right?
Yeah, that's not terrible. Like, that's
lower than I thought.
It's lower than I thought. Like, I would have kind of thought that this would be in the 300 range. But it's an exciting line. They're really beautiful. I could see this kind of getting a lot of hype in the niche scene. So I wonder how they'll be received.
They actually like can't stop smelling the amber. Something is wrong with me.
So good, right?
Maybe I'm just hungry.
Apple pie.
Real quick, I know we have a voice note that I want to get to. Yeah. We want to get to. I want to smell DS and Durga Brown Flowers, which just dropped this week. We smelled this like 6 months ago, right?
They sent a lab sample a few months ago.
Way early.
Yeah. But sometimes the lab samples are not what comes out. I've noticed this. They're different.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's called brown flowers. It's not something like I'm going to gag for.
It's a very DS and Durga take on florals.
Do you think?
I think so.
I think the campaign is very DS and Durga.
Yeah. Wait. It smells to me like I don't know what plus floral, honestly.
Do you think?
I don't get brown from it, though. I don't think I would have thought brown.
What? You would be the one.
Well, it just been kind of transparent about it. Like a little, like hollow in a structural way, not in a figurative way. But it's, yeah, it reminds me of I don't know what, because it's cool toned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And glassy.
They say it's chic, it's drab, it's now available. I can't fucking stand them. There is a coffee flower in this, which I understand is not coffee, but
yeah, I'm like, what is that?
That's really pretty. I'm obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because all the imagery is very like burnt umber and sienna 70s.
It's very... What's that movie about the hotel with that bitch with that blonde bob?
Royal Tenenbaums.
Yes.
Yes. I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah, it's very Royal Tenenbaums.
Not, it's darker, though.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the style.
And that shake and go wig.
Yeah. It is interesting.
Yeah. Weren't you the one who told me, you as if I speak to anyone else, that it was a minute ago, but that DS and Durga was exploring more conventional takes on just like fragrance in general?
Yeah. Part of it, I think, is David's experimentation, because him wanting to reinvent these more traditional or conventional scent profiles.
Sure.
And then part of it also is, I think, you want to make money.
Yeah, which fine. They're clearly having no trouble doing that. There's something chewy about this. Yeah. There's something light and fluffy, but there's a little body to this, is what I can't wrap my brain around.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. It's just not for me.
It's nice. It's interesting. It kind of reminds me of like version of the cowgirl grass scent.
Oh, I never smelled that. Oh, wait, that's in their store now, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I gotta go.
But to me, when I smelled it, I was like, oh, this is absolutely a DS and Durga floral. Because it's floral with an unexpected sidestep.
Yeah. I think you're qualified to say that in a way that I am not, and I'm comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a voice note.
Yes.
Hi, Tynan. Hi, Sable. I'm Maddie. I adore the pod. I love what you guys are doing. So for context, I'm in school for computer and electrical engineering, and I'm starting to think about my senior design capstone project, and I would love to incorporate my passion for fragrance into that. So my question's a little selfish. I'm asking, is there a problem in fragrance, perfume, or beauty that you guys think an engineer could solve? Or perhaps, is there an existing product or technology that you think could be improved or made more accessible? Now, no ask is too big. I'm just looking for inspiration, and I'm really excited to see what you guys think. Thanks.
Maddie, thank you for such a sweet and thoughtful question and the kind words. Can I go first?
Yeah.
Okay, so when I heard this last week, the first thing that jumped into my mind, and my answer is still componentry and the accessibility in componentry for differently abled people. And what I mean by that is these bottles are small. The caps are often smaller. And
sometimes they're hard to take off.
They're hard to take off. They're hard to work. Even for people who do have normally functioning hands and fingers, there are people that might not have two hands or hands at all, or are just like differently dexterous than we are. And a lot of beauty componentry in makeup, skincare, and fragrance is really hard. And you really have to have two traditionally working hands. It was last Sunday and off of the same topic, my boyfriend got out of the shower and I was like, where are the new Billie Eilish fragrance? It's really good. It's in
The Dice.
To review, the bottle is two dice stacked on top of each other. And it's like pretty clear that one's the cap and one's bottle. And it tells you how to work it. The way that man could not open that fragrance. And like, I saw him like
you just tug it.
Fucking with it for 30 seconds. I'm like, do you need help? But all that to say, these things that we take for granted, even as normally abled people, are really hard for others. And I would love to see a bottle that can be really easily maneuvered or function maybe with one hand or with just like thinking a little bigger than a normal conventional bottle and cap. I would love to see what an engineer could think up for that. And yeah, I mean, there are a billion ways that I could answer that question, but that is definitely the one that I always think about. Even like a blush compact is fucking hard to open.
But there's that new brand Tilt. That's specifically, the packaging is made specifically for different labeled people.
Me not knowing this. Sick.
They look cool. It's like they really incorporated a cool design feature into them that's also more easily usable.
The way you stay putting me on. What about you? What do you think?
You know, it's funny that when I think engineer, I think software. And I always forget that engineers, there's also very physical engineers who do things that way, like product design.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's a world of how we can incorporate software into fragrance. I don't know. I thought of it like in helping people figure out scents that they like. If there is a way to catalog almost like this, it's like a Venn diagram of a Venn diagram of a Venn diagram of like if you like one note and then hearing out with like different, I'm not explaining this well. It's almost like reminded me of Givenchy's Carto device when I saw them using it, where it's you pick one note like magnolia and then you get, I want a woody magnolia. So then it gives you options to combine it with different types of wood and then different types of effects that you're after. Mm-hmm. But if there was a way to reverse engineer that and have it like, okay, if you like this note and you like these notes, here is like a whole other combination. Here are a whole other combinations of what that could be, what scents have them.
Wait, I was fucking just talking about this with someone else, a reverse Fragrantica app.
I know that
you had talked a lot about in past years starting a beauty app. And so if I was like, I want a scent with coffee, clove, anise, pumpkin, or whatever, I would throw that into this app and it would show me the fragrances. And I was like, that's Sable's app.
It wasn't, but that is a very also good
No. I know it's not that. But like it could be. That could be our app. Don't fucking take this idea. I see you bitches out here.
You got to stop making apps, people. But something like that I thought would be cool. It is funny because I think that people are trying to like, really hard to incorporate technology into fragrance. And they keep going like the AI route. And I'm just like, why are you trying to make this happen so hard?
You know what? I'm sure it has already happened.
It is happening like in real time, of course. But I think the idea is like trying to use technology to deconstruct scent. Or what bugs me about it is that a lot of the time, most of the time that I've seen, it's like consumer based. So it's like, how do I use AI to help me buy fragrance? And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't necessarily seem to help you understand anything more about fragrance. Mm-hmm. It just is just like a consumer aid. And I'm like, but what
I don't think I understand what you mean by that.
People are using technology basically just to get people to buy more shit. TLDR.
Okay.
And that seems to be the way that technology is being used in fragrance a lot. Not necessarily in any other way that helps you understand scent better or utilize it. Or there's like the mood sense technology, which I think it's fine. But I also think it's like a little bit subjective.
Well, isn't it? Okay, the two kinds of, there's testing and claims, clinical and sensorial, right? Mm-hmm. And sensorial, like clinical is clinical. Like those, that is based on numbers and facts, et cetera. Sensorial is the kind of claims, I'm saying this for the listener, not you, is when 78% of consumers said,
anecdotal,
whatever. It's anecdotal. And like that, to me, is what all that mood scent shit is.
Yeah.
No offense to mood scents specifically, yeah. But
it's what we associate it with.
Now, when so many brands are like clinically proven to make you happier or whatever, it's like, how did we get here? And I'm not saying it's false. I'm just like, yeah, when I smell vanilla, it makes me happy. I'm an animal. Yeah. Like, you know?
But I also think people are just trying to make fragrance more functional. And I'm like, fragrance should not have a function. It should be for pleasure and art. Mm-hmm.
Who said that fragrance should... Oh, Marissa Zappos. Queen. Fragrance should never be functional.
Never be functional. Thank you. I would love to see an application of technology and engineering for fragrance that's pleasure-focused, education-focused, and doesn't necessarily lead you into a pipeline of consumerism and function.
I think the way that... I mean, being a writer and a creative, it's like I am very resistant to AI, obviously. Yeah. I think a lot of people are... not enough people, if you're honest with me. But... I think knowing that it's not something that we can fight anymore, I just hope that it is always additive and not used to cut 200 jobs. It's like, it shouldn't replace people.
I can't quite wrap my brain around its use for me personally and what I do, but I do feel like people are really shoving it down everyone's throat.
Totally.
And then there are people who have the attitude of like, well, you better get acquainted with it because it's going to be here. So you may as well learn to use it, which I also don't think is necessarily helpful either.
I don't think it's helpful. I don't think it's wrong.
I don't think it's wrong, but I don't think it's helpful.
It's like, well, with that attitude, I'm not going to.
Exactly. So. It's now I'm not. But
I'm going back to the abacus.
As far as our beauty is concerned, I don't think we need technology. I think we need to move away from technology.
It's so funny because if we were in finance, LOL, it was like it would be like, AI makes total sense or something that actual smart people do. But we are in beauty and creative and editorial, and it's like, you need a human brain for that. I'm sorry.
Also, just so much of beauty now, I feel people, again, they're like, what's in? What's right? What's the right way to do beauty? And I'm like, can anyone form their own goddamn opinion? Mm-hmm. Who cares? Yeah. There's no beauty test.
Guess what?
Yeah.
It's all subjective. There is no right
and
wrong.
And people are so resistant to forming their own opinion and standing by it. And I find that sad.
I've never been resistant to forming my own opinion. I know. I love to think.
But I feel like that's the way people are adopting AI and beauty. And I'm just like, wow, you guys will jump through so many hoops to not have to form your own opinion. Jesus fucking Christ. Good Jesus Lord. Anyway. Sorry, that went off on a tangent. Well, I hope that was helpful, Maddie. Sorry, Maddie.
Thank you, Maddie.
Thank you, Maddie. I hope we could be more helpful.
I think that was very
helpful. You know what? If I think more about it, we have your email address, so I can just tell you.
Maddie, come on the show.
Come on the show.
Come on the show in 2 years and tell us about your senior thesis.
Yeah. Yeah, please do.
No, actually keep us posted.
Yeah.
Maddie.
I'm genuinely curious about how that's going to go. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah.
Our
guests are going to be like, can you get to the fucking interview, please?
36 minutes later. Okay, so how did we get to this guest?
They emailed us. No. So I was in Sephora, as I am wont to do. I would say, I don't know, 2021 with a friend of mine. And he was like, I love this brand. And I was like, I've literally never seen this fragrance brand. And for me, not to be an ass about it, but it's like a fragrance brand in Sephora. Like, I know them.
Yeah.
He introduced me to Maison Louis Marie. And I, you know, it's not a brand that... is very me, to be honest, because they're sophisticated and reserved and very beautiful,
it
minimalist
gives me
packaging.
Like something you'd find in Dover Street Market,
or
that very minimal, doesn't tell you what it is, Monocle magazine.
Yep. It's like if you sort of combined, I would say, like visually, philosophy and Byredo, you would get here. And their scents. Their scents are more than that. They are minimal and beautiful, but there's definitely some body to them.
Yeah.
And I've always been curious about them because they don't give you much visually and everything.
I like that.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what you are. Let me figure it out.
I love to know. So anyway, when they pitched us, it was an immediate, sure, let's talk.
My first acquaintance with the brand was, so I used to go to the Credo store in my neighborhood to drop off my beauty empties because they had the Terra package recycling thing.
Yep.
Every time you do, they give you like a certain amount of points for their like point customer system.
Sure.
And I don't really care about buying beauty. Like, I don't need to buy any more beauty products. I would rack up points. And then they'd be like, oh, you can choose from our free. You have enough points for our little sample thingy. So one of the samples was a tiny little perfume oil of Maison Louis Marie, number 4, Bois de Ballancourt, which is their hero, has become their hero fragrance.
Sure.
And the woman, when she was like explaining to me what the little prizes were, she was like, this one smells just like Santal 33. And I was like, give me that. And I see what she meant by that. But I also am like, it's certainly different to me, but it was the only fragrance one. So I will always take the fragrance gift if that's available. So I was like, give that to me. And I would wear it here and there. And I would always get a lot of compliments on it. And it's funny because people would say, first they would say, oh, are you wearing Santal 33? And I'm like, no. And then they're like, are you wearing Marie Lalique? Are you wearing Maison Lalique? So it's okay. It's clear that people are associating these two together. And it's clear that the Santal trend was really big at the time. So I get why it's popular. But I would then start to see them everywhere.
Yeah.
Just it's like a weird thing where once you know something, you just start hearing about it and seeing it on Instagram. I went to a store in Hudson that had all of their scents and candles. So I smelled them and I was like, okay, they have quite a range of scents. There's a lot going on here. But I love the super minimal packaging. Doesn't tell you what it is, which I like. I'm like, let me discover this. But yeah, then we had the opportunity to interview them. So we were like, yeah, I want to know.
And it slayed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool to dig into not only their story, but as you'll hear, you know, if you call yourself a clean brand but you come on this show, we're gonna ask you about it. And I really appreciate that they actually had an answer to it. I don't think there's ever a perfect answer to it, but the fact that they were open to having an actual conversation instead of giving us a canned answer, I think is great.
So
maybe this one that I'm talking about, anyway.
What is that one?
I don't know.
This one?
Yes.
Number 13?
Yes.
Okay, without further ado.
I'm Marie Dupetitois. I'm the founder of Maison Louis Marie. I create fragrances. I am from Europe. I was raised in Belgium and France. And now I'm in Los Angeles. I've been there for 15 years. I am married with Matt. And yeah, I'm just, my work is about making and creating scent and honoring the botanical legacy I grew up with.
I'm Matt, CEO of Maison Louis Marie. Marie's proud husband. And I just take Marie's creations and try to just build the company and bring it to life.
We love it. We love a power couple.
We do. And we always kick our episodes off by asking, and Marie, we'll start with you. What do you smell like today?
Today, I'm smelling like I have a little whisper of number 4 wood when I pull and a big splash of Ici Là that I do on our latest fragrance.
Ooh, beautiful.
Generally, I love to wear the number 9.
Okay. And remind us, which one is that?
Baleine de Farnay. It's fresh with like a hint of citrus. It's like a beautiful unisex scent. It's kind of a sleeper in our collection, but it's been around since the beginning. And it's somewhat popular, but it doesn't get the attention like the number 4 or number 13 or 14.
It's a strong standby, though.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
So for our listeners that may be unfamiliar or may just need a refresher straight from the founders, can you give us a quick rundown of Maison Louis Marie?
Yes, I would say Maison Louis Marie is like a love letter to scent and heritage of my family. I named it after my ancestor, Louis Marie. He was a botanist who explored and documented plants in the late 18th century. And it's like a mix of my childhood and his history. And because we were both surrounded by plants. And so I launched Maison Louis Marie 2013 with this blend of my history and his history. And it's like really strong DNA in some ways. I started with candles and then the customer wanted some perfume oils. I didn't know. I told what were perfume oils at the time because I knew about EDP. So I launched perfume oils and then they wanted EDPs and then soaps, lotions. So it grew little by little and then now we have quite a bit of assortment.
Nice.
And your family has a pretty deep history in fragrance. So what was that like growing up with that in your background?
It's not really a fragrance. I would more say it's more nature and plants. It was really cool because my grandfather had a nursery called Le Lanthon. And then he had also a lab where they were trying to find a way to like warm orchid for the winter with volcanic rocks. So I would always wander around on the weekends. I would go there and there would be these people with white coats, labs, and I would run around as a little girl. And yeah, surrounded by plants, nature. And then on the other side, on my dad's side, we had a big estate outside of Paris where I would spend all my summer. And it's really nature who shaped me. And it was that freedom, that closeness to it that made me like really close to nature. And that's why I wanted to create something with nature.
Were there any particular plants or notes from nature that...
The orchids, my grandfather was trying, because in Belgium, it's quite cold in the winter. There was like orchids, though they don't really smell that much. Mm. But like I did base number two Lelonge out of the memory of this nursery. And then what Bernard is really based on my childhood, we'd spent 2 months there in Bernacourt. Mm-hmm. And we went out to invite as much friends as we wanted. So we would be 20 kids outside in the woods, barefoot, playing. It was such freedom. And what Bernacourt, it's all about being in the woods when I was a child. And then I created Candili, because it was the first time my mom smelled the tuberose in Candili. It was a house we had in Turkey on the Bosphorus. Oh, and then I have a really good one. The first candle I created was called Scalpe. And Scalpe, it's an island that my cousin had in Scotland. And we went there on vacation. And my grandmother said, let's go for a walk. And in Scotland, when it rains, it like really pours. And it starts pouring, raining. And we walked in the rain for an hour and a half. And it was like a splash of ocean. These are all, yeah, it's really a blend of memories and moments. And then I can carry them today, portable Polaroids in a bottle. It's really cool.
Portable Polaroids. Yeah. That's a tagline.
Yeah.
Matt, what about you? What were some notes or fragrances growing up? We always like to get nosy with our guests and figure out what was important to them from a scent perspective and what shaped them as they grew.
The scent perspective, when I was like a teenager, I remember I didn't play a lot with scents, but I think my first scent, it was a Cartier scent. Man, I can't even remember the name, which I used to probably wear way too much of as a young teen. And then beyond that, like Marie actually opened me up to the world of fragrance in a way. I come from the fashion and music world, where actually Marie has a history there too. So even when I met Marie, when we were first dating, she was, as a hobbyist, she was making candles in our kitchen. And before that, like a lot of people, I was too young and broke to buy expensive candles and fragrance.
Yeah, but you know what he forgets? Like, it's really cool because like he used to live downtown in a loft and he was next to the flower market. And I remember that when he invited me in his little flat, he'd buy eucalyptus and there would be huge bouquet of eucalyptus. And then his sister, she has a store in Venice and she would always get him the sample testers of candles. So there'd be a bunch of candles and it would be a eucalyptus like vibe. And it was really, I was like, wow, that's a cool guy. Like he likes scents, the apartment smells good. So
yeah, it was cool. Yeah, I lived right next to the LA flower market for years. And it was, I always loved in the mornings just going over there and just buying just random flowers and making weird bouquets.
He's really good at it.
I've always wanted to go to the flower market. I never have.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys should. It's so fun.
Yeah.
So cheap. You come back with, you have so many flowers everywhere.
Yeah, you can make for $120. You can like make 6 to 8 like huge bouquets out of all the bunches of like flowers and stuff. It's amazing.
The flower district in New York City it's like a hectic auction, like bidding place. Mm-hmm. And
oh, wow.
You know what I like more than the flower district? The fake flower district.
Yes.
We have these whole strip, yeah. This couple streets of fake flower shops that like mm-hmm. interior designers and event planners go to for fake flowers. I love going there.
They're really nice looking.
And just seeing what I can get into.
Yeah. As a purist, I was so anti-fake plants, but like I don't know if it's like the technology, but they're amazing.
Now they're getting really good. Yes. Yeah. Because I remember one day we went to New York and my grandmother has an apartment there and she lent us the apartment and she always has like old fake flowers, but not made from now. They're probably 50 years old. And Mike was like, this is freaking me out. Can you hide them, please? HMS.
But it is important to have a good smelling apartment when you first start dating someone. So yes. Good on you.
Yes. Oh, of course.
So we as beauty editors and podcast hosts are pretty critical, I would say, of the word clean and beauty and fragrance. And we know there's good intentions in it. But when it comes to retail, et cetera, it can get a little convoluted because we know it's not regulated. But we always like to ask, we know you're a clean brand. So what does clean mean to you?
So you're completely right. It's a very convoluted kind of definition, being at Sephora and their Clean and Planet Positive program. They have certain specifications. Then we're also at Credo. They have the gold standard, the clean beauty standard there. We're also in Goop. They have actually really a high bar in terms of formulations as well. So it's there. Yeah, there's no defined definition of clean, but there are a lot of decisions you can make. There's, you know, a lot of like fragrance preservatives that are kind of commonly found in a lot of scents, like BHTs. And then there's the obvious ones that are slowly being phased out anyways through like the EU IFRA standards, like parabens, phthalates, stuff like that. And it's, and then in terms of, I think there's a lot of confusion out there too with kind of synthetics versus natural essential oils. And instantly, maybe a lot of people, when they hear something's clean, that it's completely made of natural essential oils. But being a fine fragrance brand, it's almost impossible to go that route and have very detailed, beautiful fragrances. You have to make intentional decisions along the way. With any, all of our fragrances, it's a mix between natural essential oils and what they call safe synthetics. And when you, because we're vegan and cruelty-free. So obviously, for any musks, we're going to use the safe synthetic option. And then there's certain notes in floral fragrances and stuff like this that the harvesting would affect endangered species or endangered plants as well. So we work extremely closely with our fragrance suppliers on certain notes, making sure that like kind of the certificate of origins of those notes, if they are natural essential oils, that they're harvested correctly, if they are safe synthetics, where they're made, how they're made, and then also the levels in which you use them. Because there's certain, you know, ingredients you use like 0.0001%, and that will make a huge difference. In terms of if you increase that level, it becomes not toxic, but you just have to be very intentional on like kind of every aspect of crafting the fragrance.
Totally. And like you said, you were to use a fragrance that was 100% essential oils, that wouldn't agree with everyone. That could actually be...
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Because the natural essential oils, they contain a lot of really harsh allergens that could be dangerous, or not like necessarily dangerous, but you will get a reaction to them. It's like redness of the skin or allergic reactions. In certain cases where you would use a natural essential oil, you might want to consider a synthetic in that case, just you don't harm the customer.
Clean to us, it's we try to use non-toxic, no parabens, no sulfates, no phthalates, and we're vegan and cruelty-free. And that's what we are, right, Matt?
Yeah, that's the gist of it. But it's still this ongoing conversation, and it seems to evolve over the years. And I think when we're developing fragrances, and even with our existing line, like the IFRA standards, which come out every year or two, you know, causes us to have to look and make slight adjustments, because like with science kind of evolving, there are certain different ingredients that you constantly have to reformulate your fragrance to make sure that you're at the highest standard.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people don't realize how regulated fragrances are.
Yeah.
And because the fragrance industry is so secretive with like their ingredients and they keep everything pretty close to the chest, that
yeah.
I get why people are skeptical, but at the same time, if anyone's made a fragrance, you realize that the IFRA standards are pretty stringent and you do have to change your formulas. You have to update them. Is it every year now?
It's almost every year. It's random, but it seems like lately it's been every year, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But it seems like we're always working on it.
Yeah, frequent enough.
The amount, and like as you grow, the amount of time we spend on regulatory is insane. We have a regulatory agency. Every time you enter a new country, they all, just like Credo, Sephora, they all have their different standards. Every country has their different standards. It's just, it's a lot of work. And then even Canada is very stringent. The US is slowly getting a little more stringent, but in general, it leads with IFRA and then you go from there. But then in Asia, there's these weird things where it's like, even you have to change something that might not even be on IFRA standards, like mainly in China and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a beast.
Right. And then when we talk about development timelines and everything, one change could take you back a full year with stability testing, testing of the formula, et cetera, et cetera. I've heard from other brands that for changes, you change your formula, and then by the time it's like ready to relaunch and get to market again, something else changes. We know that it's all for the best and the safety of the consumer, which is great, but it puts brands at a deficit when it comes to keeping things
up to standard.
Up to standard. Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Yeah, you're completely right.
It's
yeah.
like climbing an escalator who never stops.
Yeah, and then there's labeling, and then what you were saying about, you know, the perceived lack of transparency. And when you see a ingredient listing on the back of the box, you'll just see fragrance. And we are always happy when customers ask, they want the detailed fragrance ingredients. We're happy to give them. And we would publish them on the box, but you couldn't fit all the ingredients on the back of the box. It's just within the fragrance.
Formulas are insane. Mm-hmm. Like just
right.
Yeah, but I think that's a cool thing that a lot of brands, the newer brands are doing, is complete transparency. And because I really love when customers ask that information and they want to know like the details of each fragrance. And then even the back and forth of it. And you'll learn things from customers a lot of the times that you didn't know or you look into further. It's really cool.
It is cool. And I too agree that this complete transparency that we've been seeing is really helpful and encouraging from a consumer perspective. But then there's that flip side of that certain corner of TikTok where it's like, if you can't pronounce it, don't put it on your bot. And it's like, that's not how this works.
No.
You know what I mean? Like everything is a combo call. Anyway, we're going down a clean rabbit hole. I'm sorry, but another facet of the same question, sustainability. You talk a lot about sustainability and packaging, but that again is another conversation that is so far reaching with so many different avenues. So can you talk about how you approach sustainability, not only in packaging, but in sourcing raw materials for your fragrance?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like early on, like in our journey, because it was funny because we launched like around 2013. We only focused on luxury boutiques for years because we really grew and evolved in a different way than a lot of brands do now. We didn't really have a playbook from the beginning. We just really wanted to make cool products, work with cool stores. And then Sephora came along, and I think it was like 2015, 2016. And that's where this clean entered into our consciousness. Because I think if you're a modern brand, it's like table stakes anyways to really care about your formulations. But Sephora was just starting clean at Sephora. And when they were vetting us, they were like, your formulations are extremely clean and we're going to be launching this clean at Sephora and we want you to be a part of it. So that kind of really led us down this path of being labeled as a clean brand. But then what came with that is we would be interviewed is the obvious next question is about sustainability. And I think early on as a really small brand, the best you could do is really focus on your packaging. We use recycled cardboard. We don't use foils and weird inks to make everything as recyclable as possible. We try to use glass wherever possible. But at the end of the day, which these things are imperative and great for the environment and everyone should be doing them, but it felt disingenuous after a while because we're still creating products that we're putting into the earth. Yes, we're trying to lower the footprint as much as possible, but it led us on a journey to really look at other ways to help the environment. So we started to look for organizations. And as we grew, we realized that we could invest and donate to these organizations. So I think the first one we found was 1% for the Planet. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but a lot of brands now work with them. And it's this really cool organization where, in essence, you're making a pledge that 1% of your total sales will go towards environmental donations to nonprofits that are doing good in the world. And we then found the National Forest Foundation, and it's a really cool organization. And so a bulk of our kind of 1% goes to the National Forest Foundation in tree planting. And we just thought it was a very clear and easy way to understand what they do, because basically for every dollar that's donated to them, a tree is planted. As we've grown through our donations, we're planting over 10,000 trees a month. And there's so many different areas to where the environment has problems and needs help with plastics and pollution and stuff like that. But carbon is one of the overarching kind of biggest issues that we face. And obviously tree planting is like a key component of battling that and taking carbon out of the atmosphere. And then beyond that, we also found Climate Neutral, which is another really cool organization. And if I knew how intense it would be to be a part of them, I don't know if I would do it again, because they really hold you to task. You have to completely analyze your carbon footprint as a brand, from like your manufacturing to shipping, like in between your factories to your office, the electricity that you're using in the office and the gas you're using for heating, to how your employees are getting to your office, and every single aspect, all the FedEx shipping from our warehouse to the customer. So it's really encompasses just like all the carbon that you put out in the atmosphere as a brand. And then you can arrive at a pretty good estimation of that. And then they link you up with really cool other projects and organizations. Like last year, we helped fund a wind farm in India. And then this year, we're actually working with a nonprofit in Brazil that kind of helps protect the rainforests. So there's just so many cool things now that we can do beyond just like our packaging, which is super important, but it just makes us proud. And I never thought we would be in a position to really help the environment like we are.
I'm glad you said that, because when people talk about sustainability, it's usually the conversation often stops at packaging. Mm-hmm. But like you said, it's not only sourcing of raw materials, but shipping them, which is tough on the environment, et cetera. So there's so many different ways that a brand can interrogate the way it is sustainable. It's a larger conversation, but we're happy that you are game to have it. So thank you.
We've tried.
Back to the fun stuff. I'm bored. You talk a lot about... We want to hear a little bit about where you draw inspiration from for the new sense that you put out into the world and you pursue.
But usually it comes from my life. Like, it's always very personal. It's never forced. I don't really chase trends. Sometimes I dig into memories or things who happen. Like now we're in the process of working on a new sense, developing a new sense. And it's really, this one is going to be about hope, about being able to like be more positive after what happened with the fires, for example. So yeah, it's really, really personal. And in the beginning, it was more about memories from my childhood. But now the more we grow, the more I try to really link it to my life, my emotions, and how I feel and how I want to make the people feel the same way. And yeah, I don't know if it answers your question here.
How is it when you are drawing from your own inspiration when the rest of the industry seems to be doing the same three things over and over? I mean, we love a vanilla fragrance, but for instance, everyone's doing a vanilla in the last 2 years. Do you find it challenging to stay competitive when you're drawing from your own experience? Or is that sort of what keeps it fresh for you?
It keeps it fresh because we're true to ourselves in a noisy market. We really try to stay who we are and not follow any trend. And that's what makes who we are. Because there's no way I can start creating something because that's what it's supposed to be right now. I don't work like that. And I've never worked like that. I'm very private. I have to work alone or with the lab and my team. But I used to work in fashion for 10 years where you have to follow the trend every 6 months. I had to go to fashion shows. And when I started this business, I decided, no, if I create something, it's for a long time. It's not because it's like everybody wants vanilla right now. I want it to last. And yeah, that's what I try to do.
That's really interesting to me because the first scent that I became acquainted with your brand, of course, was number 4, Bois de Bellancourt.
Yes.
It was like a Bader Meinhof complex where as soon as I saw it, I just started seeing it everywhere. And then everyone was talking about it. And it became, I suppose it just happened to come up in a time when sandalwood and santal was very popular. But did you have any expectation for how popular that scent would become?
No, I had no clue because I was just starting and it started with a candle and I started with 6 candles and I just created it like I was just bottling my memory. It was like sandalwood walks near Bellancourt, the Lover's Lane where I used to horse ride. And it just felt like home to me. It didn't seem like a blockbuster or popularity. It was just me, my nature, my earthiness. I liked it was unisex, like versatile, cozy, elegant. And yeah, then people like compared it to Santal, but to me it's softer. It's less in your face. It's just, I don't know, it's more subtle. And I still don't know why everybody loves that one more than another one because they're all my babies and I've all of them. It's interesting.
Yeah, I always wonder when, and I know there is a lot of happenstance when certain notes tend to become popular for a time with the Santal era. Yeah, it does. I remember hearing a lot of comparisons to Santal 33, which I was like, I know it. I was like, I can see why they're saying that, but I also don't think the wear is the same at all.
Way different.
No, there's nutmeg, cinnamon, like vetiver. There's no lilac. There's lilac in Santal 33. Yeah, it's different.
I'm sure that's annoying for you to have to.
I was like, she was ready for that one.
Yeah, but it's okay. It's just the sandalwood. If people don't. I don't want to judge. If they can't see the difference, they can, but I can.
Do you think that the popularity of Bois de Bellancourt got more eyes on the brand as a whole? And then did other scents benefit from that as well?
Yeah. I think it was a good little marketing tool in some ways, right? We got a big organic follower. People, that's how they know us. And then it's really cool because also I have a lot of friends. And when they wear number 4, I do everything I can so they wear something else. You know what I mean? Okay, look, this is all layers. Like, it's easy that. And then I have friends say, I'm switching. And that makes me so exciting. Once you create one, a new one, they want to try, they maybe switch or they do both. Like, I for example, I use a number 4 Bois de Bellancourt as my deodorant. Then all the other scents, like the notions, they're all the other scents. So I like mix and match. So it gives the customer, like, he can see what we're doing now, what's new. It's really cool because we never really did much marketing and we just got a good little crowd of followers. Very, how do you say that, Matt? Clients who come back.
Yeah, like the returning customers.
Yeah. We always listen to them. In the beginning, they're the one who told me, like, hey, why don't you do oils? And I was like, oils? What is that? I've only heard of EDPs. And then I made research and I was like, okay, yeah, I learned a lot from the customers too.
I wanted to ask you about the oils versus EDPs because you sent us both and I really had a great time wearing my way through each. But do you want to just explain the difference in wear and when one consumer might reach for one versus the other?
Yes. The Eau de Parfum, it's more bold. It projects me. It's if you want to announce yourself like an event, that's an EDP. The perfume mold is more intimate. It's hugging close to you. It's on your skin, like it's more intimate. So like I wear EDP more than oils. I guess I like to be an adventure.
Yeah, they just don't project as much off your body as an EDP. Although they're way more concentrated. So there's actually a lot more fragrance in a perfume oil. So it'll definitely give you more longevity. And then if you're super into a scent, like the best mood is to layer both. So you get the best of both worlds.
Which one would you do first? Would you do the oil first and the EDP over it?
Yeah, but for example, the oil, you could put it on your skin, on your wrist. And then the EDP, you can splash it on your clothes if you want. but it all on your skin.
Yeah, I was wondering if any of the scents were not made to be layered, but layering is a possibility for customization.
Yes, layering is a big thing now. Yes, you can mix. What's really good is number 5 and number 9 together.
Yeah.
The oil, if you mix the oil. Yeah.
This is where having numbers in the name makes it really fun to create a menu of layered combo.
I think I know that we're reaching the end of our questions, but I'm super interested to know from a founder's perspective, what's been the most surprising thing about creating and sustaining this fragrance brand that you have encountered?
Lots of patience. It takes a long time for a scent to find its feet. Matt, you should talk about this. We don't have any investor. So we're growing slowly and steady. Yeah, and trying to be true to ourselves, and it's a juggle. Can we try to keep honest?
Yeah, as you guys are probably well aware, the fragrance category has gotten so intense, especially coming out of COVID. And you see, there's always been a lot of brands, but the explosion, a lot of brands popping up throughout the years. And the model of generally people really raise money way earlier than ever before. It's become a very competitive landscape, and we're a little kind of not unique. We just bootstrapped this brand to where we are now and take more of a long-term approach of really treating the business as like a generational family business, and which I think just benefits us because we don't kind of, how Marie's talking about trends and stuff like that. We, of course, we have like immense pressure to keep growing, stay profitable, reach new customers, but we're not necessarily forced to, we don't have like other people in our ear to point us in certain directions for quick wins or any of that. So it's just, we're really focused on just creating like a very sustainable brand and doing it on our own terms.
I feel like you are probably one of the very few brands with no investment backing that has made it to and stayed in Sephora, which is a huge feat. Congratulations.
It's difficult because there's a lot of marketing.
We have to put our foot down because the number of people who want us to change our packaging to make it more colorful, so it just stands out more on the shelves, but it's not us. So it's always a battle.
And then just like the amount of kind of investment and influencer marketing and all the different areas which we play in, we do the best we can in certain ways. We just have to compete differently. And like being a Sephora brand with like, that's why Marie says when we launch a scent, we're not able to do like scorched earth campaigns. So it takes about a year for us to get a scent to take hold and bring it into public awareness. I mean, it is going, as we grow, we're able to do more and more. It is going faster for us. We're able to do a lot of cooler things. But it's definitely hard to compete.
Totally. I was actually curious about the packaging because it's very minimal. And I like that. I appreciate that when something invites you to discover it rather than screaming at you, look at me. And I could see from like the merchandiser's perspective of, or this is specifically for a very niche, very minimalist aesthetic market. Mm-hmm. But I was curious actually if you guys were thinking about evolving the packaging or like what your ideas were behind it.
I don't think like we get so many compliments. Like any customer who buys, that's what they love too, is the packaging because it's so clean. It's my vision, and I'm not at all like screaming and like colorful and have very minimalistic things. So we're launching a new product and there's going to be a bit of color, but it's going to be very subtle because that's our brand.
Yeah, we're happy with the vibe. But
to me, it calms me down. Like when you go to a place and you see so many things, I just like the simplicity. That's my vision and it's not everybody's vision.
You can't let Sephora bully you into using a bigger font.
Yeah, no, it's like we have to stay who we are.
Ellie's going to make us cut all the Sephora shit out, I am sure. This was incredible. Thank you so much for joining us today and being so open with some of these questions that some other brands want to dodge. The more that we have just frank conversations with brands, the more that we fragrance lovers and the consumers understand and get a little bit more intelligent about the way that we are being marketed too. And we just also really love your brand and have loved discovering it even more in the last couple of weeks. So thank you for that. And thank you for joining us today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yes, yeah. Such a pleasure.
Yes.
First podcast appearance. You did great.
I know. I'm so honored. So thank you so much for trusting us. Now I want to smell number 9. Their sleeper
number.
Hit. Did you call that one in?
Girl, I cannot remember what I tried.
I can't remember. I have the oil of number 3, Le Teint Noir.
I have that one for sure. The sort of spicy vanilla.
It's like a
vanilla.
Cinnamon cookie. It's
beautiful.
It's so nice.
I think there is anise in this one too.
Yeah.
I like this because it's so, like, vanilla is clearly the base, but again, not unlike the Gucci I'm wearing today, it is so spicy.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost like a, God, not a tartness to it, but like a pepper note in a way that's almost repellent, but isn't. It's nice. It's like a sharp balance to all of the warm sweetness. It's so beautiful.
It's giving gourmand to me.
Oh, for sure.
Like I think of like a gingerbread cookie.
Yeah.
That one's really nice. Number 2, I really like Le Long Fond. I also just like the number 4, the Bottom Bell Code. Call me basic. I don't care. they're lovely.
Yeah, they're not lovely.
Ooh, this one's really good too. I'm smelling them all now again. Nouvelle Vague, number 13. Remember that band? They were good. But yeah, they're nice. I'm glad we got more acquainted with their whole range.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I'm smelling all of these and I'm like, I want my house to smell like this.
Yeah.
I want all the candles.
They have a mint fragrance that I'm dying to smell.
Yeah, we should have. We did not call in right.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, they said nope. But it'll just be the next white whale I have to track down.
Well, now we know they're at Sephora, so.
Yes.
Rack up those points.
My favorite.
Wait for the VIB Rouge.
The VIB Rouge sale will be a national holiday by 2027.
I also didn't realize that they were in Los Angeles. I thought they were in France. I'm also mad now that the LA flower market is way better than the New York. It makes sense because I'm sure there's more flowers in LA in general, but I was like, why were they so mean to me at the New York Flower District?
I feel like Smell You Later has to take LA sooner or later.
I agree. I think we need to go out there and sniff about.
Let's scam it into fruition this year.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to do another swap sometime this year.
Yeah.
And definitely New York, but I hope we can do one in LA as well.
Yes. Until then, you can follow us on Instagram at smellyoulater.mp3. Oops. Go to our website, smellyoulater.live. You can shop our merch. You can leave us a voice note, just like Maddie did, and drop us a line. And then you can also follow us on Instagram and follow me at Tynan Buck.
And I'm at Sabletooth Tigra.
And until next time, we will smell you later.